report to the council, is that right?
I'm actually speaking about the development. The report is probably the example, but really, every time we develop a major document in Word, we create conversion challenges. And that's the thing that volunteers are doing short documents, short contributions. We're going to be developing major documents, templates together. We spent huge amounts of time. I consumed Thomas and Christy McGee, who was a member of our task force. I think she worked for me as a task force member in document conversion.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, we'll make sure we allocate some time for that early on.
Hi, Steve Metallich here.
Hi, Steve. Is there anyone else? I've heard a bunch of chimes. Has anyone else joined without announcing themselves?
I didn't hear
you. Sorry, if someone's speaking, I can't hear you at all. I hear vague. Okay. Well, so far I only have Marilyn, Thomas Keller, and Steve Metallitz on my roll. Do you have anyone else, Glenn?
Nicholas is on the line as well. I thought you had heard me, but I must have been on mute.
Well, thanks, Nicholas.
It's Maria. I'm on as well.
Oh, yes, Maria. I put the staff people on another side of my little list.
Sorry.
Let's see. You're over there with Glenn, yes.
On the blacklist.
On the staff list. So we are missing a number of
registries, non-commercials,
and the ISPs.
And the ISPs. And, oh, may I just say something, Jordan? I reminded the ISPs that their contribution to the recommendation one, which should have been in January, had not yet been received. And I had, about an hour ago, a message from Mark McFadden saying that he would let me have it as quickly as possible.
Okay. Well, they're sort of running up against a deadline here, I guess. But we'll certainly welcome them to provide their comments on behalf of their constituency. And hopefully they'll do it before the document's actually published.
Glenn, you might want Glenn to send a reminder to them that the document is being published.
Sorry, as I was speaking, the mail came through. So I'll send it immediately to you and to Maria and to the task force, all right?
Thanks, Glenn.
And Glenn, if you keep this up, we're going to accuse you of being quite magical.
Okay, well, we're 5 minutes into this, so why don't I, let's talk a little bit about agenda, and we'll hope that a couple, we'll get a few more participants before we get into the substance of this call. In terms of agenda, I did want to briefly, I guess first, Marilyn, we'll allow you to provide your brief comment on document management and conversion.
Tony Harris.
Hello, Tony. Secondly, I'd like to do a brief recap of the terms of reference discussion from the council call on Thursday and just provide a little guidance to the task force as to my understanding of the outcome of that. And certainly councilors are encouraged to keep me honest. And then move to hopefully the majority of our call discussing Maria's latest report and whether there are any changes that we'd like to see made prior to publishing this to or submitting it to the council as our final report. Does anyone have any additional items they'd like on the agenda?
Maybe just at the end, a little timeline management.
Certainly, that's will be somewhat related to, I mean, I'd actually, why not, well, let's try to move it to the end in the interest of getting to the substantive call, but we may briefly touch on that during the second topic, which is the recap of the terms of reference discussion.
Okay,
so Marilyn, I'm going to start this off by turning it over to you for your brief comment on document conversions.
I'm glad that Tony is on the call as the co-chair to the previous task force. I had the same experience on the transfer task force, and I just want to make a suggestion that I'll raise at the council level as well. There are, it seems to me, there are three kinds of documents that get developed. One is the documents that get developed by the staff. Two is the documents that get developed by a counselor or a task force member that are significantly substantive and lengthy. And three is the day-to-day contribution or email exchange. But all of these documents have to be converted in order to be posted to the ICANN website. And in the previous, we ended up consuming major amounts of time from Thomas Roessler and from Christy McGee, who was a representative from the non-commercial constituency who happened to have a business in this kind of support. And we really utilized, I mean, I was feeling so guilty by the end of the task force work that I felt like we should be sending her a payment. Because it is very, very consuming to do the document conversion on the major documents. I think we've just experienced a little bit of a hiccup in compatibility. And my suggestion would be that we ask the ICANN staff to, and I did some consultation at the time with Kent Christopher on ideas for how to do better. My suggestion would be that we go back to the ICANN staff and we ask the ICANN staff to work with Kent and put forward a template that they would follow themselves and any documents that they develop for us that are developed originally in HTML. The bylaws are in HTML, and that for major documents we are going to develop, we see if we can use an HTML editor. I certainly could have done, now that I think about it, I could have taken the document that I contributed yesterday to the council that was also CC'd to the task force. I could have done my document in an HTML editor. This would really cut down on the time and demand on the ICANN staff resources that are unplanned. They're kind of ad hoc, and they emerge out of, you know, a quick flurry of work. And I think we should see what we could do. Not a hard and fast rule. I just volunteered to be accommodated to the greatest extent possible because we're all very pressed for time. But perhaps in the major documents, and certainly in documents the staff developed, we could try to adhere to HTML development rather than Word development.
Thanks, Marilyn. I mean, my only comment relating to that would be that the one advantage that Word offers compared to HTML is the ability to redline changes, or at least easily identify those changes. And there are ways to do that with HTML, but they generally involve...
First discussion with the ICANN staff, believe me, and I'm not going to develop everything in HTML by any means, but I think for the major documents where staff develops them and then we have to go through a conversion cycle, we might want to think about and get some guidance on being the most effective with the least stress on the system.
Yeah, no, I think it is an important topic to consider, and I certainly don't oppose trying to use HTML wherever possible, at least until we've seen any, to see what sort of operational challenges that poses as opposed to some of the current document formats that we're using. So I welcome any other feedback on this, or we can Marilyn, we can take your comments under advisement and see if we can attempt to work a little bit in HTML and see how it affects the productivity of the task force.
Jordan, let's be clear. I wasn't suggesting that the routine contribution
be. Yeah, no, understood. You're just talking about major major documents. Yeah, understood. I would imagine, I mean, many sort of what I consider to be routine documents that we transmit on the list are actually either plain text or HTML by virtue of people's email clients automatically rendering them in HTML. Okay. But you're right that I mean, it can be difficult to work with lengthy Word documents, especially since they have to all get converted at some point anyway.
Thanks, Jordan.
No problem. Okay, so with that, we'll move to our second agenda item, which is a brief recap of the terms of reference discussion at the council last Thursday. The outcome of the call, I suppose, was that we do not yet have new terms of reference. I was not on most of the call, but I gather that the counselors felt that some additional time was needed in order to refine the terms of reference, given some issues that various constituencies or counselors may have had. And as a result, it was decided that that submissions would be made by various council members or constituencies in order to attempt to make additional modifications to the terms of reference. The council also solicited input from the task force as to how our ongoing work ought to be accommodated in the terms of reference. And I would point specifically to the work that we're doing on today's topic, which is the notification provision. That may be a moot point by the time the terms of reference take effect which is likely to be at the next council meeting in early June. I think June 2nd, is that right, Glenn?
That's right, Jordan.
Okay, and the other topic will be the conflict with local and national privacy laws topic, which is not, I think, currently contemplated in the terms of reference as they stand today. So, to the extent we believe that it's important for those for work to continue on those topics, and I think we have had informal agreement within the task force that that's the case, we need to, suggest language in order for that to be incorporated into the terms of reference. Is that a fair summary from the counselors that are on the call? I may have missed things since I wasn't on for most of the discussion.
George, it's Marilyn. I'm confused about one thing. I asked to have the input on the other two work items to be jointly developed by you and Maria, and I think that was agreed to.
You're right. Actually, that's correct. It was by Maria and myself, not the task force writ large.
Right. And so that still needs to be done and then inserted into the terms of reference. I believe the council agreed and supported the idea that there should be a single terms of reference, but it would have like these subgroups of work projects or something. It would have, you know, sort of on multiple work initiatives or something like that. The two existing, and then the one that Bruce had done the drafting for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. I think that the consent topic will be, or the notification topic will be, sort of a moot point by then. But it's probably good to draft some language to support the work in any case, just in case.
Right,
and note
that it could be. Concluded.
Yeah. Exactly, but yeah. So I'll work with Maria to draft some language that's intended to describe at least or encompass the existing work that's taking place in those two areas. Any other thoughts about the or questions about the terms of reference discussion? Okay, great. So we're sort of in a business as usual mode for the next few weeks until we get to get the new terms of reference in early June. Marilyn suggested that we might want to briefly visit the topic of timeline at the end of this call. I think that's probably a good idea, just to discuss how we'll be organizing our work. But my general goal would be to resolve the sort of pending work items, which are the consent piece and the piece on the conflict of national laws, hopefully within the next few weeks. Give some sort of disposition one way or the other, and then we can focus most of our time on a go-forward basis on the new terms of reference that that Bruce has been developing along with the council. Okay. Moving. Marilyn?
Were there other people who joined? That's what I heard.
Let me ask. Has anyone else joined the call and not announced themselves? I guess not.
But we still don't have the non-commercials?
Correct. We don't have the non-commercials or the registries at this point. Yeah, it's a surprisingly one of our most poorly attended calls in some time. Maybe we'll have to see how this new time slot's doing. Moving on then to our substantive discussion this week on the topic of preparing a final report on the consent work item, our first work item. We did receive, I think, a total of 4 public comments on the initial report, and Maria has now drafted a new report, which I guess, Maria, I couldn't open Glenn's document yesterday, so I finally got a chance to look at this this morning. Is the only difference here that you've added Section 3, the public comment report?
Yeah, that's the only difference. Apologies about the document. I sent Glenn the wrong file format. The only new change is really the 4 descriptions of the 4 comments we received and an update to the table of contents. So really, I guess the question is, are people happy with the summaries of the public comments?
I sent a posting today to Maria and to the rest of the people.
Marilyn, you're very dim. I can hardly hear you, unfortunately. Not that kind of dim.
Well, I could be that kind of dim. I sent a posting yesterday to the list that I'd like to discuss for clarification. Because I perhaps am confused about what this document is, and in that case, my comment may be not relevant. I thought this was the final report to go to council that would encompass the recommendation and vote after the public comment process.
Yes. So this hopefully should be the final document that goes to the council. The PDP does not, I don't think, specify that an additional vote by the task force takes place after the public comment period. Am I right about that?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. So what I think the bylaws say, and I don't have them in front of me, is that we're supposed to, at this point, get a final report that incorporates the public comments, and then I think the original bylaws, that's all that happens. We don't do anything again. It just magically gets forwarded to the council. I think we decided that it would be helpful for the task force to sort of review the recommendations and the content of the report in light of the comments. And I would certainly suggest that in the event that we decided to make any substantive changes, certainly to the recommendations in light of the in light of the public comments, that we would solicit another vote at that point. But if we don't make any changes, then it seems consistent with the PDP that we would, there would not necessarily be another vote, and we would report simply the outcome of the previous vote.
Yeah. I think, and I said in my posting that I realized the guidance on format is extremely unclear, but that we are forwarding to council, and most of the council are not engaged in this on a day-to-day basis. So I think at the ground probably needs to be augmented by a couple of that by what has, or it could be done in a cover document, perhaps. But that summarize, because what we've just basically done is taken our preliminary report and pasted in 1.2. These are not, by the way, public voting on the recommendation. The people who provided comments were not voting on the recommendation. So we need to fix that title. But mostly I'm concerned about what is the mechanism by which we are going to summarize our discussion today and transmit this to the council so the councilors have a very clear understanding of what the process is, what they've got, and what our recommendation is. If the task force prefers to have a transmittal document that has those points in it, I would be comfortable with that. But when I read this, in the introduction and background, the last paragraph in the background gives me a very different time frame assumption than what the reality is.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it would be helpful to update the document to bring the sort of the history up to the moment at which it's submitted to the council.
And as I said in my email, I think this is just a question of adding a couple of paragraphs that you and Maria could consult on.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. So certainly I think you're right that I think your suggestion that we add some additional history to bring us up to date to describe the that we did vote, that it was put forward for public comment, and this report now includes those comments and so on, seems straightforward. And I think you're right that also that 1.2 probably needs to be retitled to something else, perhaps just summary of public comments on the preliminary report or the recommendations for the preliminary report.
Sorry. And then just insert the date of the public comment period.
Yes. I think that would be useful because certainly we need to differentiate between 1.2 and 3, just to be clear that there were different public comment periods on different topics and to clarify that. So I think those suggestions do make sense, and I'll work with Maria to attempt to incorporate all of those for a future draft.
And I just want one other comment, if I could, to the staff, and I would ask you to pass this on. The present process by which I can filter spam is so efficient and so effective that it is difficult to penetrate that veil and get comments submitted on a timely basis. And this is true for all of the lists that I can is managing now. And I'm enthusiastic about managing spam, but I'm confounded by I send a transmittal, I get no acknowledgement from the spam filter. I don't know it hasn't come through until I wait for a day or so to see if it can mysteriously show up. And, you know, it's just a, just an idea that we need to think with ICANN staff support more broadly. I don't mean the policy staff. How do we make sure that posting do get in? Because my posting was a day later. I think it was not a, like maybe 8 or 9 hours later than it should have been.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful, and I'd certainly make this recommendation that that the list software, the archiving software, provides some sort of affirmative response one way or the other to the poster, that either your message was posted or that your message was diverted to the spam list or something else was done with it other than it being posted for whatever reason. And that would allow the poster to take corrective action at that point.
Jordan?
Yes?
I'm sorry, this is Ken Stubbs. I was wondering, are we taking a vote this morning?
We are not going to take a vote this morning.
We're not.
There's nothing to vote upon. There's nothing to vote on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Jordan, you've made that decision based on that. There's no vote required.
Well, correct. So Marilyn, so yes, the bylaws don't ask for a vote. If we were to have a vote, I suppose I would certainly want to make it clear that we were going to vote before the start of the call.
But I'm asking a different question, not on the content, but for you as chair, which I'm just interpreting it and asking for clarity. Your view as chair is that we can transmit this to council without a vote just on the process of transmittal. Would that be accurate?
Correct. My reading of the bylaws is that unless we decide as a task force that we would like to make substantive changes to the report, which I would say that even though it's not contemplated by the bylaws, it would seem to be a waste of a public comment period if we weren't allowed to react to them. That unless we decided to make some changes in light of the public comments, that the natural course of the bylaws would simply be for the staff manager to submit the report to the council. I certainly don't have a problem with conducting a vote on transmittal as opposed to substance. And certainly, if we were to alter the substance, I would. Think that we would have a vote on the new substance of the recommendations as well if we were to change them at all in reaction to. So I guess my answer, Marilyn, sort of depends on what we decide to do in reaction to the public comments, if anything.
Yeah.
And if we don't decide to do anything, I don't think there is a vote required. I think it would the report would naturally be forwarded to the council. If we decide to do something, I think it would become incumbent upon us to vote on whatever we decided to do.
Thank you, Jordan. I wasn't certain. David Maher is in a meeting in Philadelphia, and I have to go into one here in the West Coast at 7 o'clock, and I just needed to know if we were had to be available for a vote, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Also, Paul Stora has joined. Sorry I'm late.
Hi, Paul. Thanks.
Wrong access code.
Okay. Any other questions along those lines or suggestions about the form of the report?
So you and Maria will make those suggestions, and then I guess we should talk about if we're going to see them from you or they're going to be viewed as administrative.
I certainly would. I would definitely. I think it's so far the nature of the suggestions are administrative. I would certainly submit them to the list prior to forwarding them to the council to allow further feedback, but I wouldn't view another vote as being a necessity based on just your set of comments, Marilyn. It may be there will be additional feedback that we gain as well that are not administrative in nature, at which point, you know, we engage in a slightly different process. But yes, Maria and I will undertake to implement the suggestions that you've made. Okay.
Jordan, this is Steve Vitalis. Just to clarify,
yes.
I think we are at step 9 of the PDP here, which calls for the public comment period, then the staff manager reviews the comments received, added those deemed appropriate to the task force report. And she has done that. And then the staff manager shall prepare the final report and submit it to the council chair within 10 days after the end of the public comment period. So that's really what we're leading up to now. And as you said, Marilyn had some administrative comments, and there may be others, but that's kind of where we are in the process, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's helpful. Thanks, Steve. I'm glad you have the PDP in front of you. So as you indicate, the normal course of the PDP would not open this up to an additional vote from the task force, even for transmittal.
Right, really a staff function.
Exactly, and it's an administrative function at this point. But as I've indicated, the reason why we have this call is not only to gain comments about the form and administration of the report, but if we do want to make any modifications in response to the public comments, I think that we ought to have that ability, in which case we would hopefully make a quick revision to the recommendations and then vote again if that were the case, because I think that would, anytime we're changing the substance of the recommendations, certainly I would want to vote again. Okay. Any other comments about the form or how we're getting this? I mean, how we're proceeding from this point out? I do want to move to a discussion of whether we do want to make any substantive changes to the report in light of the public comments. Okay. So let me move then to a discussion of the public comments. We did have 4 total comments, and these, including 2 from 3 from participants, at least occasional participants in the task force, between Bruce, I guess, on behalf of Melbourne IT, and David Maher and Marilyn all provided comments, along with one from Alan Levin. 3 of the comments were not supportive of the recommendation. Once again, with, I guess, unsurprisingly, Bruce and David, their constituencies don't vote enough to support the recommendations. So I'm not entirely surprised that their individual comments reflect that. Marilyn, I think, made a comment in support of the recommendations and also clarifying some of the purpose. And then Alan Levin made a comment indicating that he wasn't in favor because because the recommendations are not clear that you only have to consent once or to check the box once or whatever, not consent, but be notified once during your relationship with the registrar. That's actually a topic that came up in our previous discussion. I think Paul Stahura had raised the concern that if someone was registering a bunch of different names, or they came back often and registered names, that they wouldn't have to go through whatever procedure existed more than once. In reviewing the recommendations, I think they're somewhat ambiguous on this point. and this may have been what inspired Alan Levin's comment. So I wonder, do we think that it's... does anyone else have thoughts as to whether this is something we'd like to correct in the recommendation?
I'd like to speak on that issue.
Yeah, certainly. Marilyn, anyone else want to speak on that issue?
I'll go for it. What the heck?
Paul? Okay, Marilyn, go ahead.
In my posting, I referenced some of the things I had in developing the online privacy regime in the United States, including launching and...
Marilyn, you're close not to be to be heard, actually.
Sorry?
And there's an echoing line as well.
Sorry, is that any better?
It's a little bit better, yes.
How's that?
That's great.
Yeah, okay. I'll get rid of that headset. Nasty thing. The comment that I posted has to do really with my rather extensive experience in helping to generate and launch the Online Privacy Alliance in the United States at a time when the whole issue of public posting of online privacy notices just basically didn't exist. And we went through a really extensive 4 to 5 year learning process. But the thing that we learned is that we did have to remind users on a frequent basis. And my understanding of our recommendation was that this reminder would be presented to the registrant when they are making an interaction that is related. So, you know, that's sort of my assumption, that at various times the registrars will make sure that this notice, it is not consent, it is a notice, is presented to the registrant so that they can indicate their awareness of it before they proceed. I'm interested in the discussion that this be once in the lifetime of a relationship with a registrar. And I'm happy to hear about that, to discuss it more. That was not my original understanding, but I'm interested in hearing the discussion.
Yeah, and just as a point of clarity, in reviewing the, and I think you're right, it's a topic that was raised previously, Marilyn, but I actually can't read into the recommendations even your interpretation, which is that it's once per sort of interaction. It's unclear to me whether it's once per interaction or once per lifetime or once per domain name or whatever. It just says that these disclosures have to be made. And so I think it may be useful to get some consensus in the task force as to what the best approach is and clarify that within the recommendations.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Jordan, just to clarify, I wasn't saying once per interaction. I was inferring occasionally in the interaction.
Okay. But yeah, well, I guess my general point is that the way I read the recommendations, it's not clear how often they should be made, one way or the other. How often the disclosure should be made. Paul?
I guess we do need to memorialize what I thought we kind of agreed to when we talked about this many months ago. I thought we agreed that I could see the, Marilyn, I think you're looking at it from like a retail case, but, you know, there are registrants that register many names every day, and it just doesn't seem practical for them to, like a notice every time they register a name 10 times a day.
I think should I respond, Paul?
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn. We don't have anyone else in the queue right now.
I think that's a very interesting discussion, Paul. That's why I said I was going to talk more about it, because you know it could be that there is a situation where someone says, "Okay, I'm going to be a pardon me for using this term. I'm using it very generally. Vault register. I'm going to register a number of names at this time."
You're better. You're can you go back off the headset?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So someone says, I want to register a number of names in this transaction. I want to create a template that will be the rule for all of the names I register in this session. That's kind of a, I'm trying to sort of present an environment where it would get out of that individual retail mode that you had just mentioned. And that's what you're sort of suggesting, I think, right? I am registering a large number of names. Let me check the box once. Is that the proposal?
I was thinking more like when they create an account, they see the notice. I'm more opposed to it now.
Yeah, you know,
which is hard to believe because I'm getting really opposed to it.
Yeah, Paul, the problem we face is that when we get into the discussion about national laws, there are many national laws that do require notification of a consumer of that impact them.
Yeah, okay, how frequently are they required to have the notice? Every day?
I thought we were having a positive and pragmatic discussion about that question. So I don't mean to be upsetting you, I'm trying to have a discussion about it.
I'm not that upset, I'm just curious. Is it every day?
Okay, that wasn't what I said.
That's what you said, I'm just asking you. Did we show it to them every day, or how often do you think they should see the notice?
I think at the time of logging into a session, a user probably needs to be notified. Or they could be given the option of waiving that. That becomes more complicated to implement.
Sorry, Marilyn, what do you mean by that last point?
Well, at the time of signing up for something, you know, when you can, when you subscribe for a service, say, please don't notify me again.
Right. No, that makes sense. So it seems to me there's three, maybe four options that are on the table here.
Mm.
One is to essentially for each domain name require explicit acknowledgement of the conditions. Second is for each, we'll call it batch of domain names registered at one time.
Right.
Third would be for each relationship notify.
Right. Right.
And then fourth would be fourth I'll put variations, but essentially it could be something like number two, unless at the time they create the relationship, they agree they don't want to be notified anymore, or something like that. Or every third batch, or, I mean, who knows? but those, I think, create the general framework for the options. So I think, Paul, you're saying you'd prefer the third one, the each relationship.
Well, when I was reading it, I don't have it in front of me, but I remember it was kind of linked to when we get them to do the agreement. And I understand it's not it's a notice, not an agreement. But my reading of it, it would seem like it was linked to when they agree to the click-through agreement. That's when I thought we would show it.
Right, so I guess that would be, different registrars actually have different practices, I guess, in this regard, because, for example, in a retail context, we, I think, at register.com require people to be, to agree to the, and we provide them with the services agreement each time they register a batch of domain names, whereas we have corporate clients who sign an agreement one time, and then that's the only time they're ever presented with the agreement. So
you also have resellers, just like Enam does.
Correct. Yeah. But I'm just saying different relationships. Registrars may have different types of relationships with different, yeah, with different customers.
Right now at Enum, our processes are the registrant, the resellers show the agreement to the registrants when they register names. Or when they sign up for an account, they agree to every name registration made in that account after that point are all agreeing to the registration agreement. Not every time they register a name.
Yeah, and Paul, so they would be reminded on a yearly basis, would that be fair?
We do remind them on a yearly basis, but because of the other notice requirement that we have that tells them to, you know, make sure their WHOIS information is valid.
Right.
We do that for each name every year.
Uh-huh.
So if it was a yearly requirement, like if it was something like show them the notice when they agree to the agreement and once a year, that fits in good with the existing processes because we already show them the agreement when they sign up, and we also show them this other thing every year. So that would fit in well with what we already have, you know, development-wise.
Right, and in the offline privacy world, I believe the requirement in the U.S. is an annual notification. That's the requirement.
This is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yeah, certainly. So, Marilyn, why don't you finish up your thought, and then Steve, anyone else want to be in the queue?
I'm through. I was just...
Okay, so you're saying that that yearly requirement may mirror processes in the offline world? Is that the comment?
Yeah.
Okay, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just suggesting we look at the text of the recommendation. First, it requires registrars to do three things. First, they have to present the disclosure to the registrant during the registration process. So it doesn't specify which model of those models it's talking about. It has to be during the registration process, and linking to an external web page is not sufficient. The second thing the registrar has to do is, if it presents the disclosures with the agreement, then it has to have them broken out of the agreement, or it can present them separately from the agreement. So either way, there's flexibility there. Third, they have to obtain an acknowledgement that they've read and understand the disclosures. So presumably, every time they give them the disclosure, they're supposed to get an acknowledgement. I think this is pretty flexible and accommodates a lot of different models, but I think it's fairly clear what the registrar has to do.
Right, I agree with that. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah, Paul, anyone else?
I agree that it is flexible, but it's since we've had this conversation more than once, it seems like maybe we need to spell out an example. Would you consider somebody coming, making an account, going through that whole process you just described, 6 months later, registering a domain name, not going through the notice process at that time?
Well, is the first thing part of the registration process? Is any registration happening there?
No, but the registration process is 6 months long.
Yeah. Can I get in the queue?
That's my question. You said it was flexible. Is it that flexible?
Steve, do you want to answer that, or should I turn it over to me?
I can give my opinion. I mean, it's just odd that the people who are concerned about ICANN micromanaging the process are now asking task force members to micromanage the process. I think it's pretty straightforward, and if you can defend that what happened on day one is part of the registration process, then you're in compliance.
Jordan, can I get in the queue?
Yeah, Marilyn, you were next.
Okay. Can I make a proposal that might help us on this?
Yeah, certainly.
It seems to me that this discussion is the level of detail that I have often felt that the task force should be able to engage in at some point in considering what the implementation of the policy would look like, kind of before we finalize the policy. We haven't instituted that in the PDP process, but it seems to me that... from what Steve has just said, and what I personally feel comfortable with on behalf of the BC is that there is on a regular basis, and I'm leaving the term regular undefined right now, a disclosure that meets these 3 points.
It doesn't say that in the current way it's written, does it? It's a one check for the life of the registration.
Pardon me? Sorry?
It's a one-shot notice for the life of the registration, currently the way it's written. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think Paul's right in suggesting that there's no follow-up.
Actually, I disagree with that, and I think that it depends on what the definition of during the registration process turns out to be. And that, I think, is, in fact, the sticky issue for Paul, and that it's what is the definition of during the registration process?
Yeah, but it's not more than once during the registration process, whatever that's defined as.
That would be true, Paul, but then I think you get into the question of, is the registration process when I establish my relationship with the registrar, or is the registration process the actual time at which I'm registering a domain name? Isn't that the sticky issue for you? Or the lack of clarity?
That's part of it, but you just got through saying that it sounded like what you were saying was you wanted it some kind of yearly or, you know, periodic notice.
I was saying what I feel comfortable with on behalf of what the BC wanted was a periodic notification.
But that's not in it right now. That's what I'm trying to clear up.
So it seems to me I'm asking the question, could we forward this to the council with the suggestion that the definition of what the registration process should be defined as, to be determined by an implementation group which would be composed of the task force, or do we think the implementation group should be put together separately? Because usually, you know, when we implement policy, we do form an implementation group.
Yeah, that's correct. I think that there's two issues here. One is, I think you're right, that we could get the question of whether this happens once per what could be, or once per registration process, once per batch, once per domain name, once per relationship. I think that perhaps could be deferred to an implementation group as part of defining that particular term. But it seems, Marilyn, like if you have additional, if you also like to see some sort of periodic notification requirement, that seems more like a policy change that we want to have reflected in the text prior to it reaching the implementation group. Because I think it would be a bit of a stretch in my mind for an implementation group to read the current text and say, aha, this says that in conjunction with their annual WDRP notification, they should also get some language about the fact that their information is published in the public WHOIS database.
But here's the problem. I think the lack of clarity is in what we mean by during the registration process. And we're all speaking kind of informally right now. Steve, I don't know if you or Tony Harris want to comment on what your views are about the time frame during which notification should take place, or the frequency. Let me say it that way, the frequency.
Tony Harris here, can I speak?
Yeah, certainly, Tony.
I think it should be when you register for the first time and every time you renew your registration.
So Tony, let me ask you this. A lot of registrars have automatic renewal processes in place. So how would you anticipate that would be handled?
Well, do you send an email to the registrant when you automatically renew his registration, informing him of this?
Probably. I mean, once again, if you talk about like resellers or larger...
Sure. I mean, how does a guy know this is being done?
Sure. Well, so like a large mark holder might get a notification once a month of all the activity that occurred during that month.
Plus, well, if it's a paragraph at the bottom of the notification, notification and he's seen it once, he knows what it is, he won't look at it. Why is it such a hassle?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's necessarily saying it's a hassle or not, Tony.
I think it's trying to clarify. Okay. Black Talk, it's Paul.
Yeah, go, Paul, go ahead. Paul, anyone else want to speak on this?
Yeah, I want to be back in the
It's funny, it's because even though we have some customers saying, hey, automatically renew my name, we're not contractually required to send them a notice before that we do renew their name. We have a contract that says they want to renew it every year, so that's what we do. As a courtesy, we send them emails and so on, but we're not required to send them those emails to tell them that we're renewing their names.
Okay.
And the other question I have for you is, what if a guy registers it for 10 years? Does he get a notice? Are you thinking that we need to be required to send him a notice once a year, even though it's registered for 10 years and we're not renewing it?
Not necessarily. Not in my opinion.
So, can I?
I do have another question on this, though. I'll get in the queue.
Yeah, why don't I'll put you back behind Marilyn.
Okay.
Marilyn, go ahead.
Well, I think the description of the situation that Paul just identified of registering for 10 years would fit the idea that a registrant has waived a notice of their responsibilities. That doesn't mean that they are not responsible for providing accurate information. They are not waiving that obligation, right?
Yeah, I think that's good. Yes. There's no way to waive that obligation, you're right.
Right,
we do send that notice every year. The thing that says, look at your who is, and make sure that information is correct. We send them...
Look at your who is and make sure it's accurate. And here we're saying that and they would receive a notice saying the information is displayed in who is.
Yeah, so I think, Paul, I think I heard you say earlier, and I taking off my chair hat for one moment and speaking purely on behalf of a single registrar, I think that it wouldn't be that difficult to implement, to add something on to the existing WDRP notification.
I agree with that, but it says that we have to record, doesn't it say we have to record that they've actually seen it? Not the WDRP, this new policy, the notice policy we're talking about.
Right now there's no language about
Can I speak, Tony Harris? My question was about that.
Yeah, so Tony, go ahead.
It's what we have achieved some level of consensus on in the third point says registrars must obtain a separate acknowledgement from registrars, or that should be registrants, that they have read and understand these disclosures. My question is, what happens if the registrant fails to acknowledge reading and understanding of the disclosure procedures? Can he still go ahead and complete his registration? What is the default conclusion in this case if he doesn't acknowledge? What happens?
I would read the current text as prohibiting a registration in that case. Like, they wouldn't be allowed to register if they didn't.
This is Steve. That would be the same as the registrar accreditation agreement already provides. If you haven't obtained the consent from the registrant, you can't process the registration.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I guess the current RAA, you're right, Steve, that applies to obtaining the consent generally to that notification.
Right.
That doesn't apply to this separate acknowledgement, but I think it would be a stretch to interpret the current policy as allowing the registrar to obtain the acknowledgement, but just ignore the result of that.
Well, it seems like we couldn't switch it to be kind of coincident with the WDRP notice, because that does not require us to.
Well, so let me ask a question, because I'm a little. I think we're approaching ground here where we may be able to get a revised set of recommendations that meet. That are more likely to pass at the council level, and I think we've got a couple of interesting concepts here. One would be to tie some additional notification onto the WDRP notice, And another, just sort of returning to the general set of comments, I think Bruce Tonkin's comment suggested that maybe these sorts of notifications would be better suited in a privacy policy. I'm not 100% sure how to incorporate those ideas into this as well, but maybe there's some ground where in the initial registration process there's some added flexibility to satisfy the concerns that the registrars and registries have raised, and the trade-off is that there's an ongoing notification stream to registrants as part of the WDRP notification.
Jordan, can I get back in the queue?
Yes.
I have an idea.
Steve, could I get in the queue also?
Certainly, Marilyn and Steve.
Let me ask if on three, registrars must obtain a separate acknowledgement from registrants that they have read and understood these disclosures. If we agreed that this separate acknowledgement could include time frame for which that acknowledgement was applicable. So, and I'm just thinking out loud here, right? It might read time frame to be mutually agreed by registrar and registrant. Registrar must obtain blah blah blah. This time frame could be at every registration. It could be on an annual basis. It could be for the period of time of the contractual relationship between the registrant and registrar.
So you're suggesting the registrar could have a checkbox there that says, like, don't remind me about this again, or only remind me about this once a year, or something like that.
Right. I'm really thinking out loud here, and I can't tell you for sure I could even recapture word for word what I just said, but it seems to me that provides flexibility at the time of establishing a relationship with the registrar. But it does require one and two still.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Steve?
Yeah,
I get in queue after Steve.
And then Tony?
I think we may be unnecessarily complicating things a little bit here. And there's a lot of good ideas about how this could be done. There's nothing to stop a registrar from doing all these things. And, in fact, you know, originally the IPC's position was, let's develop best practices in this area. And these all would be practices. But the fact is that the RAA requires that there be consent. If someone withdraws consent, they're no longer eligible to register, I would assume. The time period during which the consent is effective is coextensive with the length of the term of registration. I think we have two issues here. One is the idea that there would be an implementation group once this recommendation was adopted that could deal with issues such as, you know, how does number point one apply in the case of somebody opening an account from which many registrations will flow. And the second one is the idea of periodic reminders, which I think is a good idea, but I don't think it's encompassed by this, and that could be something that's done in the WDRP, and of course there's nothing to prevent a registrar from doing that now, and we should encourage a registrar to do that now. But again, I think if we keep the focus on what's here, I think all these issues that have been raised could be addressed in an implementation group.
I'd like to get in the queue.
Yeah, okay. Tony, and then Paul.
Okay, well, I have a suggestion, which is actually a part question and part suggestion. When somebody completes a registration, I'm not too sure if he gets an email to the email address he's indicated, automatically an email is sent just asking him to reply to that email, and then it's completed. Something like what happens when you register for an ICANN meeting. You submit your pre-registration request to the ICANN, a database, and they send back an acknowledgement, an email which you just replied to, and that's that. If something like this is not implemented, it would achieve two things. Somebody hits the submit button on his application, automatically you send him an email saying, confirm back that, that this is okay or something like that, and whatever the terminology might be, to indicate that he, you're just rechecking with his email before processing his order. And in that email, you could put, ask him to acknowledge that he's read and understood the question of disclosures. It would be automatic. It doesn't create any work for anybody. And it would draw the registrant's attention to this feature. Okay?
Yeah, just to answer your question, Tony, the current accreditation agreement doesn't require that sort of, like, email verification. It has various other requirements, but that's not one of them.
Okay, but in all the work that we've been doing for years to fix Whois, there are problems with Whois because the accreditation agreements don't cover certain things that have come up in the last few years. Right?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I don't think either. I mean, I think your suggestion is worth considering. I don't think it's
changing the way things are done.
Right, it is a way someone could implement the current set of recommendations, but we'd have to create a new recommendation probably to make that process obligatory somehow.
That's true, but I think the point is you have one check on accuracy there, which is on the email itself, and it's a chance to tell this person, you know, you got to look at this matter of disclosure. Are you happy with it? And then he sends back the automatic reply, and okay. You've got acknowledgement, and you also know it's a valid email.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that comment, Tony. Paul.
Yeah, it was basically about what Steve said.
Okay.
About the note, I'm curious. What is I don't know how I could implement it with a periodic notice, because I send the notice out and number three says I got to obtain a separate acknowledgement. If they don't give that, do I delete their name? Because it's already been registered. So if it was, it seems like it's got to happen before they register the name because of number three.
Are you asking, this is Steve, are you asking me to clarify that? What I thought.
Yeah, I just can't see how it can be periodic.
Yeah, I don't think this recommendation covers periodic notice. I think it covers a notice in the registration process. Periodic notice, I think, is a separate issue, and it could be incorporated in the WDRP. Is that right? The reminder policy. But I don't think it's in here. I think the implementation here would be in implementing, one and two, in with these different. Models that the Jordan talked about. That's my view.
So let me ask this. So I think the problem I see, Steve, with just deferring some of this work to an implementation committee is my guess is that it's unlikely to reach an. I mean, right now the registrars and registries have both indicated that they oppose these recommendations, and given the weighted voting in the council, that means. This is unlikely to become consensus policy, assuming that those votes hold at the council level. So I guess my question would be, do we think it's worthwhile to try to revisit these recommendations in light of some of our discussion today in the public comments to tweak them at all in order to make them more likely to pass muster at the council level? Or do we think that they're good enough and we ought to forward them to the council and see what happens, and recognizing that there's some additional work perhaps by an implementation committee, assuming that they succeed.
Can I get in queue, Tony Harris?
Yeah, Tony.
Did you want me to respond to that?
I want the task force to respond to that question.
I'll get in the queue after Tony.
Yeah, sure. Tony, Steve. Go ahead, Tony.
It might seem to make sense to revisit it in view of the fact that, if memory doesn't fail me, the registry and registrar representatives in the task force did not support these recommendations. I think that's a fact, is it?
Yeah.
And in that case, the foreseeable future in the council is not too difficult to predict. When we have a vote on it, with weighted voting, we'll probably have a stalemate. And then we've gone through this for 2 or 3 months for not much result.
Thanks, Tony. Steve?
Yeah, my view is that the registrar and registry representatives have had more than 6 months. I think if you go back to, earlier parts of the task force, they've had many months to propose changes to what they've come up with is really Bruce Tonkin's language that it just says, you know, we should make it available, which is already, I think, I don't think that adds anything to what we have in the current current RAA. I think this is the kind of issue that should be dealt with by an implementation committee. And if the registrars continue in their view and the registries this is not implementable, then I guess they should vote against it at the council.
Craig, well, generally, I don't think I was ever in the council during a vote where somebody went to an implementation committee, so I'll have to rely on Marilyn or perhaps Tom here or Tony. Assuming that a policy was voted upon in the council and did not achieve a two-thirds majority required to become a consensus policy, would it be sent to an implementation committee or not?
Yes, it could be, Jordan. Consensus means it's binding, but it still could go forward as policy, as an option. But so the council would have to decide whether to send it to an implementation committee. But it wouldn't be, it wouldn't go to the board as consensus policy. It would go to the board as policy recommended by the council with whatever vote it is.
Right. So there it would have to at least obtain a majority in the council for that to take place. Is that right?
Yes, it has to obtain a majority. But I'm actually thinking we're groping our way toward being able to come up with something that should be acceptable. I'm not sure. Maybe it doesn't feel like that. But I think there's a list of questions that we've talked through today, and probably Maria and Glenn have kind of captured the questions. And then there's the discussion that we've had. Isn't it feasible to think that we could, we could sort of say, here's the policy as we presently discussed it. Here's the vote in support of it from the preliminary report. Here are the questions that have been raised about its implementation. And the task force could make a recommendation about how to explore the implementation issues. That would be one option. The other option, I guess, would be for the task force to do more work on implementation itself before sending the report forward. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I think both of those are, I think both of those are viable options. And I think the third option is that the task force could actually make not just implementation choices, but, for example, the periodic notification issue would not be an implementation issue, but a new, an adjustment to the recommendations. It's conceivable we could do that as well prior to forwarding it to the council.
I have a question about the process.
Me too.
Go ahead, Paul.
So I didn't quite get it. Let's say, this goes to the council. The council says, votes no. Then it goes to the board of ICANN?
No, if the council votes no, then nothing happens. But if the council supports it but without a two-thirds majority, then the council can either send it to an implementation committee or directly to the board as policy but not consensus policies. So it wouldn't be binding, but it would be adopted as policy. So you could implement it or not, I guess.
Yeah, but Jordan, it would probably have an implementation working group in either case.
Right. So likely then, if it were to pass at the council level, it would likely go to an implementation committee who would presumably work through some of these issues.
Like, let's say it passes with a 51 majority.
Right.
Then it would not be consensus policy, so our contracts would not change. Is that correct?
No. Right. Then you would be allowed to implement it, but not obligated to.
Right. Consensus policy takes 2/3 vote of the council.
Thanks.
Yeah. That would be, I mean, this is not a direct example, but something like the RGP, not a policy, but something that people are allowed to implement, but are not obligated to. Has there been an example of a policy that's been passed by the council that's not a consensus policy?
Some of the work we did under the DELETE task force on there is one aspect of the transfers and deletes. Most of it was consensus. I think there was one element that was not.
Okay, so there's a policy. There's a set of recommendations, some of which are policy, consensus policy, and some of which are not.
Yeah, I think so. I could go back and look.
Okay, we're starting to run a bit low on time, so let me suggest this as a path forward. I think that there are some interesting issues that we've touched on today, and some questions at the very least that are worth forwarding that may become implementation questions, or questions for an implementation team, perhaps accompanied by at least thoughts from the task force. So I'm glad to try to at least work with Maria and gather those questions and issues that we've discussed today. I also think that there's been some interest. I would think it would be more valuable for us to forward a set of recommendations that we think is likely to pass and become consensus policy than not. I mean, these recommendations in particular seem to be not all that interesting if they're not consensus policies, since the people that are supposed to implement them are the ones saying that they're unlikely to do so on a voluntary basis, I guess. So I would suggest that perhaps there's that over the next week, I'll endeavor with Maria to put together the issues over the next couple of days, and then over the next week or so, if we think that there's adjustments that could be made to the recommendations that could gain support that address some of those issues in advance of forwarding it to the council, and we think that there's support for that, then maybe we'll attempt to do so. And if we don't see any changes that are gathering support that are going to address the issues that were raised today, then we'll simply forward this to the council and allow the council to do what the council's going to do, I suppose. So that leaves us, I think, with a three-step process from here on out. Number one is for Maria and I to document the set of issues raised today. Number two, to encourage on-list discussion or possible suggestions for how we, whether there's language we'd like to forward to the implementation committee, or ideas we'd like to forward to the implementation committee, or B, adjustments made to the recommendations that maybe address some of these issues. And then three, if there is broad support within the task force for any of those adjustments to the recommendations, then we could consider modifying the recommendations and forwarding to the voting again and forwarding to them to the council. But I'd like to try to do all of that within about the next week, unless a new vote is required. I'm going to suggest that on next week's call, we reserve a bit of time to discuss this topic again and see whether there is any movement in terms of adjustments to the recommendations. And if not, we will simply forward the report to the council at that time.
George, it's just an idea, but, you know, I do think in the implementation process, it's worthy to note, so everyone is aware of this, that we have an audible.
It's hard to hear you, Marilyn, again.
I'm sorry. Implementation working groups can They can only implement policy. They cannot change policy that they're getting to implement. So that's important to know. They have to remand it back if they, you know, so if an implementation working group, because they're not, they are about implementation. They're not devising policy. So if you, I think you might want to think in your discussion that you're talking about what guidance or instructions or input the task force might want to provide through the council to an implementation working group.
Yeah, no, I think that is useful as well. So I think that hopefully that will evolve out of the set of issues, but it is. I think generally speaking, you're right. That would be the one of the two outcomes, I guess, I could see from the exercise of laying out the issues is that we simply put together a set of guidance for an implementation committee, and part of that would be identifying issues that they may wish to address, and part of that may be providing more general guidance about the policy objectives and so on.
Because they have to interpret a policy. Even we're having trouble interpreting it.
Exactly.
Jordan, hey. Steve, can I get Nikki?
Yeah, sure, Steve. But the other possibility is that we might elect to change the policy recommendations, and in that case, at least some of the options for the implementation committee would be, it would be a slightly different, I guess, set of issues for the implementation committee in that case.
Would you put me in the queue so I can ask you a question about that?
Certainly, Steve, and then Marilyn.
Yeah, Jordan, I'm not going to object to what you're recommending here, but I just do want to say two things. First, it is not consistent with the policy development process. This report should go to the board. And second, I just think it kind of degrades everything we've done here if people can kind of wait in the weeds for six months, and then at the last second come up with additional issues that they want to raise about the policy. I mean, the policy is supposed to encourage people to give input in a timely fashion when it can be considered and put out for public comment and so on and so forth. And basically, the procedure you're talking about here says, don't worry about all that. Just wait till the last second, and then you can step forward.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I think that, Steve, I think my main concern is actually resolving... one of the objectives in a previous step is to see if it's possible to resolve any of the concerns raised by the constituency statements and the task force members, and I think we weren't able to do that previously. I certainly wouldn't want to say that we're not able to do it at this point. In regards to your first point that this is not consistent with the PDP, I recognize that. I think previous to this call, we had decided that it seemed like it wasn't particularly useful to have a public comment period if the task force didn't have the ability to react to it. And I think that at least encouraging some discussion in light of some of the comments that have been received to see if any changes to the recommendations are agreed upon by the task force, although not consistent with the PDP, the text of the PDP, I think certainly seems like it honors the spirit of the public comment period somewhat more. Marilyn?
So here's a couple of ideas.
Sure.
One, I do think that what you're trying to do, Jordan, is to resolve some concerns, and I know from sitting on council that, you know, we want to resolve as many of the concerns as possible so that we don't just relitigate, so to speak, the same battle at the council level. So I support the idea of trying to close as many of these as possible in a very time-effective manner. So if we can, one idea might be to ask whether we could provide a definition for what we mean when we say during the registration process. and maybe it is that phrase alone. I'm just proposing this. Maybe it is that phrase alone that we could try to reach an agreement on what it means along the lines of some of the discussion we've had. And if we could reach an agreement on that at the task force level, I'm not saying we can, but if we could, that might provide sufficient modification, very limited modification, but sufficient modification to the text of the recommendation. It might be that that won't be adequate, but it might be a place to start.
Yeah, so I certainly think that would be a good starting point. I don't know. I can't speak to whether or not it would be adequate or not, but it does seem like a good starting point. So that is certainly, I think, one of the issues that Maria and I will identify in to the task force as an issue that was discussed today that probably deserves some further clarity, either from the task force or from the implementation team.
And then the other thing that I would just say you probably want to just send a note from yourself as chair of the task force to the council, advising the council of the steps that you're proposing to take to address the resolution of some undefined issues, but trying to do it in a very time-effective manner. Right now, council meets again on the 2nd of June, I think, Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That's right, Marilyn.
I don't... That would give us only 1 week, is it, I think?
I think it's actually 2 weeks, yeah.
Two weeks.
I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay, you're in the queue, Paul. Are you still done, Marilyn, or are you...
I'm through. I'm just trying to...
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if we... I would like this issue to be resolved one way or the other prior to the council. I mean, fundamentally, I think what I expressed earlier is that we don't have changes to the recommendations that are agreed upon by the task force by within a week, by the next call, then the recommendations will go as is to the council. So, Paul, go ahead.
Let's say this exact text got a two-thirds majority, and so now it's policy that we all must comply with, well, we all registrars. Do we have to comply with the implementation of it, or can we interpret it the way we want, implement it the way we want? But I don't understand where the implementation binds us. The implementation, we throw this over the wall to the implementation people. What happens? Do we have to do what they, how they recommend that we implement it? Is it a recommendation, or is it a must?
My Marilyn can probably answer this as well as I can, but my understanding in the past is that the implementation committees have suggested refinements in the text that's finally adopted by the council.
That's all that
I've heard. Board.
Okay, I'm with it.
So that would make it binding.
They have suggested refinements, but the council has had to agree if that changes the policy.
Correct, but if it doesn't, then the council would theoretically incorporate that into the text of the recommendations that's forwarded to the board, and that would become part of the consensus policy. Is that right, Marilyn?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So assuming that the council agrees it's consistent with the policy text, the policy language from the task force, then it would become binding.
So if we got a 51% majority, then the implementation people come in, modify it. It does. We have to say, oh, that doesn't modify the policy. It goes back to the council to get a two-thirds majority. Then we're bound by it.
So I don't understand your question, Paul.
My first question was: we put the council, and it gets a two-thirds majority, and then it goes forward. My second question is, if it doesn't get a two-thirds majority, it gets a 51% majority, it goes forward, the implementation people modify it, then it gets a two-thirds majority, then we're bound by it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the implementation committee concept's not contemplated in the bylaws, but I would assume that if a policy were adopted by the council on a two-thirds majority basis, it would be binding.
Jordan, this is Steve. Since we're past the 90-minute mark here, could we get back to what else we expect to do on the next call? I will have some time on this issue, I think you said.
Yeah, that's correct. We'll have some time on this issue. And the other issue, I'd like to go back to conflict with national laws topic and make a decision. I think it will be helpful to make a decision about how we're going to treat that as advice or policy. Because I think what came out in the last call is that will be useful in shaping it, shaping the actual text that we forward, and how we're going to proceed from that point out with regards to that recommendation. So that's the other place I'd like to spend some time during the next call.
And then could you just spell out a little beyond that in the following calls?
So beyond that in the following calls, we should have a new... terms of reference at that point, so hopefully it will be a little more clear what we're supposed to be doing in the following calls.
All right, but in terms of the other two other things are outstanding, accuracy and tiered access, so we'll wait on those?
Assuming that the council adopts a new terms of reference on June 2nd, we do have one more call before June 2nd. So, Steve, let me do this. I'm gonna I'll propose on the list maybe a path forward on those topics because I think it's not 100% clear exactly what the best path forward is at this point. I mean, I think we're pretty close on accuracy, but I think what I heard at the council level was it would be useful to weld that to the access discussion to a certain extent. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to affect the terms of reference one way or the other. Okay. Any other questions about timeline or path forward? Because otherwise I think it's time to wrap up the call. Okay, thanks everyone. We will regroup again next week to talk about this topic as well as the conflict with national laws. And between now and then, expect to see from Maria and I a list of issues as well as some thoughts on how to drive the other two topics forward as well.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks everyone.
Bye.
Bye.